You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Well, you've asked for it, and we're back. I have returned for a second season, another year of big-name interviews with coaches, players, and legends that have made the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague exactly what it is today. Once again, I'll be getting down and dirty with these special guests and find out what life is all about for European basketball elite, both on and off the court. Stay tuned and remember, no subject is ever out of bounds when you're on The Crossover. Welcome back to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. I am, of course, Joe R. Lucas, and happy to be sitting down with a guy that I've actually been looking forward to talking to for quite a while. It's hard to find anything about him, you know, how much I search and dig deep online. It's like his persona on court. He just kind of goes about his business quietly, and when the game is over, you look back and you realize how much he's actually contributed, but not in last year's final, that's for sure. He was hiding. He wasn't hiding from anyone right there. He made sure that he was seen, and it's hard to hide anyways with that hairdo he's got. Please welcome Mr. Daniel Hackett to The Crossover. How are you, my man?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you, man. It's like I said, it's like even when I was looking for information about you, you just kind of just fly under that radar, you know?
I've been trying to keep it all business lately, and it's been a good thing for me.
Good. Talk about the hair, man, and I was looking back. You've had these dreads for at least 4 or 5 years now. I think it was around the last picture I saw of you was maybe your first year at Olympiacos.
I mean, actually, I had a few stretches where I had them and then cut them off.
And then cut them off. How long does it take to grow back, though?
Yeah, they keep coming back. I don't know about cutting them now because I'm getting old, 31. And if I cut them off now,
you're afraid they don't come back.
Yeah, it might be it.
Is this part of who you are now? Is this something like, I don't know, superstition, like your look, that Samson thing? You know, you feel like you need to have that hair.
Well, actually, when I came back to Italy from the States, and I started playing professional for Treviso Benetton, mm-hmm. There was a guy who was playing in Virtus Bologna named David Moss,
which all
of you know. Yep. And you know, he had the dress style, and I liked it. And you know, also his demeanor on the court, the way he was playing, was somebody I looked up to early on in my career.
Nice.
And I was like, man, I wish I had hair like him. Let's see if I grow them out, what they look like.
And, but right now you got a little bit under control, man. But sometimes in the game, they just stick out all over the place.
You know, it's now they're pretty long. The funny thing, I actually got to play with David later on in my career.
You did?
In Siena, in Milano. And, you know, we became close. He's a good guy, good kid.
Good. We're going to get to all that anyways. Yeah. We're doing this year a special 20th anniversary crossover too, and I did one last week with someone you might know, Corey Higgins, C. Higgs as I call him. Yeah. Y'all kind of come from the same breed. You got dads that played basketball before.
Exactly.
Your dad played in Italy, played all in the States also.
Played in the NBA.
Played in the ABA also.
Syracuse University.
Yep. Yeah. So you went to Syracuse. I'm a Rochester boy. I'm from upstate. I'm upstate New York. So when, how did your dad came over here and married an Italian girl?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And then you were born from that America. He didn't spend too much time in Italy.
Oh, he actually did. He was with the Detroit Pistons. Maybe 79 or the 80s,
right.
Early 80s. And actually, Maurizio Gherardini was the GM in Forlì, in this small town in Italy. That's where he started. And
right.
he brought my dad over to Italy. That's a funny thing. Now
that is crazy.
And we are very close with Maurizio. And yeah, dad came over. He started his career in Italy, played, mm-hmm. You know, quite some years in Italy, also had some stretches of a career in Turkey, mm-hmm. France, and then finished off in Italy again.
He's kind of like Corey's dad, too. He's been all over the place.
Yeah.
I think Corey's dad had the record of the most teams in 1 year. You know,
my father actually stopped early. He stopped at 32, 33.
Uh-huh.
You know, I thought he could have kept going, but he went into coaching.
You were young then, though. You really didn't... You didn't get to see him play.
I never
got
to see him play.
Yeah, that's how I was looking at the numbers. I'm like, nah, you were probably like 2-3 years old when he finished, right?
Exactly.
So you never really got to hang out in the locker room and go to practice, and or that you remember of anyways.
Well, I did when he was coaching.
Yeah,
he was started as assistant coach in Pesaro, in Scavolini, mm-hmm. with I remember the Americans, Dean Garrett, and, Cody Games, and some other legends that came in Italy. You know, Antonello Riva and all these guys. And
God, Antonello Riva.
Yeah, it was. So I've been around, but you know, growing up in Pesaro in Italy is a basketball town.
Right.
So I was always looking at games. And
Italian was spoken in the house, or was it English Italian?
It was both.
It was both.
Dad tried. He tried to speak English, and sometimes I were rejected.
So he tried to speak English, and no one wanted to talk English with him.
Nobody wanted. I wanted
really?
To speak Italian. I wanted to be just like all the other kids.
Right, of course. But you were getting Italian from your mom, right?
I got Italian from my mom. And also, you know, around people, I would get shy to speak English. So we kept the Italian for a while.
Brothers and sisters?
I have a stepsister, on my mother's side.
Your mom? Okay.
She's older than me, yeah.
Basketball? Nah.
No basketball.
She's in Italy?
She's in Italy. Her name Barbara, yeah.
So Any other?
I got to give her a shout out.
Barbara?
Barbara, yeah.
Hey, Barbara, how you doing? Sitting here talking to your big brother. Big brother, little brother?
Little brother.
Little brother, there you go. Any other sports? Because, I mean, you got that tennis look. You got that, like, tennis body.
No, it was not tennis. Soccer.
So, well, of course, yeah. I hate to always put soccer as the first one, man.
It was soccer and
football, man, like they call it.
But it was pretty bad because I was too tall. I was too fat as a kid.
You're
so
a fat kid.
I would be a goalkeeper.
Right, of course.
But after a while, it got boring. I was bored. I wanted action.
But wait, you were a goalkeeper because you couldn't run?
Because I couldn't run. I wouldn't run fast enough to play soccer, and I was too tall. So everybody was like, oh, that's our goalkeeper. Look, tall, fat, he's perfect for us.
When you were in Italy, is it kind of like in Spain when you start playing basketball? Is it all federated stuff? Did you get like on the Pesaro team or the Scavolini team?
Yeah, we had a younger team of Scavolini Pesaro at the time. I grew up and doing that until I was about 14, and did all the young steps, the steps that the kids do to get junior team and all this stuff.
But then you took off.
I went to the States.
Yeah, was your English good enough, or was that a difficult transition for you?
It was not an easy transition. First of all, for how it happened,
That was one of my questions too. Like,
mom and dad came to a point where it wasn't working anymore.
Right.
So, pops made the decision to, let it go and
to move on.
Back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
At that point of my life was pretty hard because
it
was difficult
age.
To understand. Yeah, I was about 12 years old.
Yeah,
wasn't mature enough to understand what he was doing and what the situation was.
You're 12, you're not supposed to be mature enough.
But for how bad it looked at the beginning, this gave me an opportunity, and my father gave me an opportunity to go back to the States. And to play high school basketball out there. And, my mother was lovely enough to say, yeah, you gotta go and chase your dreams.
Chase your dreams.
And that's how I went to L.A., to the States. Let me
try to get this right. 12 years old this happened, but you probably didn't go to high school till 14, right?
I had a couple of years. I stayed a couple of years more in Italy along with my mother.
Along with, and your dad wasn't there?
Yeah.
Okay. And how often did you see him then? Did you get back
all
and
in
forth
the summer? I would go and visit him in L.A.
Okay, so you had some LA schools, check out some
AAU. Okay. Yeah, I had some L.A. experiences before going.
So that made it a little bit easier.
The problem is when I would come back to Italy, I was not a good kid.
We got some stuff. I couldn't find anything.
Teaching school and hanging out with the fellas and. At a young age, was a little bit dangerous. So,
was that maybe part of the reason your mom said, "Get over there"?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Mostly because of school.
Right.
I was not going to school enough. And
hey, look, man, that to me, with so many things that I've seen in life with people, that says a lot about your mom, because the typical thing to do nowadays is, no, he stays with me. You know, we didn't work out. You took off. You went back to the States. She could have been, you know.
She could have been, yeah, yeah. The one that says, no, you stay in
yeah,
here.
And you stay here.
But she understood my love and passion for the game.
Right. But that's her own personal sacrifice, because that's
exactly.
a couple of years. That's a few years that she's not going to be with you as much.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's not easy for a mom, man, because, you know, she brought you all along. You know, that's your baby boy. So it's a shout out to your mom for that. That's good stuff. And that's why you're here today. You had to do a lot of friends too, right? When you got up in, I mean, how hard is that? I mean, 12, 13, 14 years old, all your friends.
Yeah,
although are you telling me there might have been some bad friends?
No, I mean, not bad friends, but you know, it's the age you started going out and you got your moped, you know, you start, you know, tasting life and
But
actually, yeah, it was difficult to leave Italy, leave your normal environment, the place where you grew up and where you feel comfortable at. But I was so excited to go to LA and to go to high school and start this new journey that it gave me courage. It was like, yeah, let's go and do it. And okay, if it goes bad, we'll come back.
Right,
if it goes well, you made a good move.
It's crazy because nowadays, I don't know in Italy is so much, but I know in Spain, a lot of places in Europe, there's so many agencies that are getting scholarships for kids to go over and play sports. You know, in Spain, it's huge. It'll be swimming, tennis, golf, all these different sports, and kids are getting scholarships to go back over. That wasn't something that was really available back when you were doing it. But how much of that, and we've already talked about it, how much of that do you kind of a credit to where you are today, the success that you have, speaking different languages, living in different cultures, and playing some good basketball on the West Coast. Although I'm an East Coaster, but
yeah,
you know.
Well, no, it definitely gave me a reality check of how was basketball in the States.
Right.
And at that point, high school basketball was blowing up.
It's huge.
The years of the D Rose, the Kevin Love,
right.
And the Eric Gordon and the Brendan Jennings. You know, AAU basketball
was
crazy.
AAU just started at that point. That's when it got
starting.
Yeah, it was just getting crazy.
ABCD camp was full of talent, and I remember going there and really asking myself, like, am I ready for this? Like, am I athletic enough to be on the court with these guys? Am I, you know, it's, I had some doubts, but
everybody
these died. Doubts brought me to the gym. I was like, I got to work harder. I got to be better. I got to be more athletic. I got to have a better shot. I got to be quicker. And, that put me in a mindset to just work. Since I was 14, since I got there, I would ask my high school coach, I remember Chris Madigan, the keys to go to shoot before class. So at 6 a.m., he will come and open up the
You're
gym.
One of those gym rats.
I was one of those gym rats.
I love it. Yeah.
And I try to, you know, keep those thoughts with me, those memories as I'm progressing through my career.
You know, doubts are, I do a lot of speaking to kids and I speak with just about everybody. And I always talk about doubts can destroy you or they can make you better. You know, it's just like anything. It's just like positive and negative thoughts. You know, if you want to think negatively, you can think negatively all day long. But it's when you get that positive mind frame where if the negative thought pushes you to the positive, it makes you work harder, then it's a different thing. Or it could just take you down. In your case, I mean, it built you up. I mean, you saw people like, damn, I got to get better. This is crazy.
Yeah.
But how were you accepted? Because back then, now it's a little bit more common that a European player goes back to the States. Mm-hmm. Back in 2002, man, they were like, man, get out.
Italian guy
coming here, can't speak no English, try to take my spot. Come on, you couldn't have been accepted right off the bat.
It was not easy, but, you know, Pops is, you know, he's helped me a lot. He's a brother, African-American, So I'm a mixed kid.
Right.
Also being Italian with this funny accent, I had the Latinos also on my side. So I was like, hey,
there you go.
You know, as I kind of brought everybody together, and it was funny. You know, my high school also was had a lot of kids from all over the world.
Of course, yeah.
Could be, you know, Asians, Latinos, or kids from the United States. And You know, it was a pretty good experience, except, you know, it was an all-boys school. We had to wear uniforms.
Oh, no. It's my next – you're married, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to – I don't want to say nothing about your wife or anything, but that accent back in the day had to pick up some girls now.
It was all boys school, and, you know, that kind of kept me focused also on the basketball side and the books.
That's not bad. I didn't see much high school stats. Obviously, it means you're getting old, man. You know, that page of the Wikipedia thing must have just that erased on me. But your college stats, right? You went to USC, my man.
Yeah, man.
When I say USC, for all you Southerners, and if you're listening in the States, it's not South Carolina. We're talking about the real USC, the only USC, University of Southern California, the Trojans.
Yep.
That's big time, man.
That's huge.
Huge. You know? I'll tell you my story about USC. I played at Niagara University in the East Coast, Niagara Falls. I mean, you can't get any colder, man. You just can't get any colder. Minus 30, minus 40, wind coming off the falls. Terrible. We go out my senior year, and we got a game at USC. And, man, it was my senior year. And I'm like, I can kill myself for not ever thinking about going to the West Coast, man. I wanted to stay close to my family. I wanted to stay close to my mom and my dad. And I said, all them women out there, the California girls. I went to the UCLA campus. I'm like, and I'm thinking, my first question should have been, did you have any other offers? And my second is like, I wouldn't have gone anywhere either.
I did, actually.
Where'd you have offers at?
I mean, Coach Boeheim at Syracuse was, you know, okay. Of course, being
Jim and I go back a long way
at the time, so yeah. He was assistant.
Your dad was assistant at Cuse.
No. My dad was a player.
Right, player.
Boeheim was an assistant.
Oh, when your dad was playing.
Time,
okay.
Yeah. God, that so
was
him and Coach Hopkins used to come to LA a lot during the summer, and they was recruiting me. Coach Romer at Washington at the time.
Right.
You know, I had some offers from Arizona, Oregon, Wake Forest.
Some
I had
some
good offers. But I was like, why? Yeah. Why would I leave LA?
Exactly.
And at the time... the program was trying to come up. Mm. We had a brand new arena.
Who's
the Galen
who
Center.
You then?
Coach was Coach Floyd. Team
Coach Floyd.
Floyd
okay,
was
yeah,
just
yeah,
signed.
Yeah, yep. And so he brought you in too.
He brought me in.
That's good. That's always comfortable.
And I wanted to go there.
Right. Your freshman year was. I mean, you played a lot mm-hmm. more than a typical freshman probably did back then. But then your sophomore year, your junior year. You played. Put up good numbers.
Yeah.
Put up really good numbers. You played 3 years that I saw. Mm-hmm. Did you graduate early? What'd you study?
Sociology. I didn't graduate. I'm still on track.
You're still working that degree?
I'm still working on it.
What are you on, the 20-year plan?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to finish before 60.
How many credits you away?
I got about 28.
Hey,
what's that, 28? That's about what?
What's that, like 10 classes?
Yeah.
8 or 10 classes? Listen, that's not a bad thing, though. I'm going to tell you why. Because you think about it. Like, I got my degree in, like, 87. Mm-hmm. I played this game for, like, 13 years. And then when you walk out, if you go to give your degree to someone to get a job 13 years later, like, well, what have you been doing? I've been playing basketball in Europe. They're like, yeah, well, what have you done for me lately? So if you go back and get your sociology, it might not be a bad deal.
It's not a bad idea. It's not
a bad idea. I kind of like that. That's a good plan. I don't think that's the way you planned it, though. But you left because you wanted to go play?
No. Coach Floyd was fired.
Okay.
The school had some NCAA allegation problems. We were banned. Supposedly, my senior year, we were going to be banned from the Pac-10 tournament and the NCAA tournament because of some problems with the agents and some other players.
And you played 3 years in the NCAA
I played
tournament.
3 years, and yeah, and I was hurt about it. I didn't want to transfer out, and you know, I was trying to ride the wave. We had a great junior year. We won the Pac-10 Conference tournament at Staples Center. Taj Gibson and DeMar DeRozan were going into the draft. They both went high in the draft, and I thought I had a chance to go, but that didn't work out. So,
is that a dream of yours?
It was. Mm-hmm. It was. I think it's a dream of everybody to be in the NBA.
I mean, if you're playing the game, it's almost like, you know, if most people, if they sit and tell me, nah, I went to the gym, I don't really believe. I could see a European guy, they're like, man, I didn't really dream because I never thought it would happen, but you're there.
I was close and, you know, didn't get drafted, but I had a good B plan. And Treviso came and got
me. Best B plan, man.
the Italian passport.
As an American, that kind of pisses me off, man. I mean, you got the American passport, you got the Italian passport, yeah. You lived in Italy. I'm like, because I always ask the American guys or the guys that studied in the States, I'm like, what was that last game like? You don't really know what your last, you didn't know it was going to be your last game.
I didn't know.
When you lost in the March Madness.
Yeah, we lost to Michigan State.
Draymond, you didn't know that was your last game.
I didn't know. I actually thought I was going to come back for my senior year. You know, problem is that in that draft, with like 12 point guards got drafted. It was the crazy draft with all the point guards. Rubio, Flynn.
Yeah.
You know, I think Calates was in that draft.
Rubio and Flynn went. They both went to Minnesota,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was packed with point guards.
Yeah, I remember that.
So that didn't work out.
Because Syracuse had 2 point guards that year.
Yeah.
They had Flynn and somebody else, too, I think. And then Michigan State had,
Michigan
was
State,
it Cleves?
Lucas or somebody.
Yeah, there was a bunch of point guards. Yeah. You would have been, I was looking at the list of Italian players to put in the NBA. I mean, there's more now, but back then you would have been the third player to really actually, if you ever made it to the NBA.
Maybe third.
Because I had.
Bargnani was there.
Bargnani was there already there. But before you?
Yeah, before.
Oh, did he get there before? Okay, I didn't see that.
He got there before. Bargnani was there.
Stefano Rusconi, who I played against.
Okay, yeah, those are older guys. And
Man, shut up.
No.
This is my show, man. Hey, we'll delete that. Don't worry. No one's going to hear that.
Okay.
And my boy, you know, I played with, who played in the NBA for a little time, was Enzo Esposito.
Enzo. Now he's the coach in Brescia.
He's coaching in Brescia.
He was, I want to say him and Rusconi were the first Italians to try.
Right, exactly.
Carlton Myers.
Carlton,
I thought he had a big chance. He never wanted to go. I don't know why. But
he had a good name over there, too, in the States. Yeah. Yeah, I played with it. I played in Caserta my first year over in Europe, man, with Enzo, Nando Gentili, Pietro, Sergio Donadoni, Pietro Generali, Oscar Schmidt. It was like, I don't know who. I mean, Oscar got all the shots, but we had a team. Everybody wanted to shoot the ball, man. It was crazy. That was the first team I've ever. That was the first and only team I ever played for where I didn't take the most shots. You take some of the, like we were talking about. You finishing your college career, you don't. I mean, you want to get drafted, but if you don't, you got that pillow. You got Italy.
Yeah.
And of course, you took advantage of it right away. You decided not to redshirt because if you would have moved from USC, a lot of people might not notice that are listening. You move from USC, you have to sit out a whole year.
Yeah, because I didn't have a valid excuse to transfer.
Exactly. You would have had to stay. Either way, you would have either stayed 1 year and for nothing.
Exactly.
Or you would have went 1 year, spent 2 years at another place. Let's say you go to UCLA.
I was too old already.
Yeah.
I was 21.
But I don't know, but back then, if you transferred in the same conference, was it 2 years still?
Yeah, 2 years.
It was still 2 years. If you, yeah. So you had to get,
I had
you
to
had
go.
To get away from the
it
West Coast.
Time. It was time. And yeah.
So you come back.
Benetton offered me actually a great deal at the time. You know, they had a lot of expectation. They gave me a lot of responsibility early on, and that kind of burned me. Mm-hmm. I had a very bad first season as a pro.
I was going to ask you.
It was not easy.
The difference between college ball and coming over here your first year. I mean,
completely different thing.
Yeah.
You know, in college at the time was still 35 second shot clock. I don't know. Is it still like that in college? Maybe they changed it to 30 now.
I don't know. I think it's still 35 actually.
But you know, just coming to a team with expectation like Treviso and with pros and all that, it took me a while to understand where I was.
No, but when you get to Benetton, like I played against Benetton for years when Vinny Del Negro, Tony Kukoc. I mean, when Benetton was Benetton,
yeah,
they weren't Benetton when you got there.
No, but they
still had that feeling.
They had the swag. Yeah, they had the swag.
They're still Benetton, no matter what. The name still is big.
You know, I walk in there and I see Gary Neal and he called me Chump. What's up, Chump? So that's a good welcome, man. And we had some.
You thought you weren't accepted in the States when you were there. You came back from the States and you weren't accepted in Italy.
A quick reality check. And we had some older guys, Davor Kuz and Sandro Nicevic. And, you know, it was a team that was mixed with young kids and older guys. And that didn't work out well for us. Casey Rivers and Bobby Dixon came halfway through to help us out.
There was
coaches changes, and you know, that was it for me. It was one bad year, and they were like, maybe we're not gonna keep going with you. You gotta find another situation.
So, but you found a perfect situation.
I mean, you went back home.
You went back home.
Hometown kid. another big decision.
I'm sure your mom's happy.
She was happy as I was excited. You know, actually before.
I mean, as a kid, to go back in your hometown and play professional sports got to be like the coolest thing
ever. Exciting. It's really exciting. It's dangerous because you're going to have a lot of eyes on you. Well, I was prepared. I had some fire inside. I didn't want to fail again. I didn't want to fail my people.
Why do you think you failed?
Well,
you didn't play that bad in Benetton.
Yeah, but
really
there was some situation where that I could have handled better as a rookie, mm-hmm. as a pro, and my mind was not really into it. You know, it was
your first year.
Yeah, I was getting distracted. You know, getting the first money. You know,
that gets everybody.
Yeah, it gets everybody a little bit, and. But, you know, that summer I worked my butt off. I went back to L.A. I was like, yo, I got to get better. So I started working out with all the pros I could find out in L.A., every gym. Went back to my high school, worked my butt off. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to my hometown. I'm going to play for my hometown, and I'm going to succeed. And it was a good decision.
The distractions of playing for your hometown are major. I mean, you know, going out. Hanging out with your boys, you know, no family, tickets, you know, the all the requests you get. How do you separate? Or how did you? Because you're a young professional this time. You're a sophomore in the professional.
22. There.
Yeah.
22. Yeah.
It's not easy to separate, you know, what you remembered before you left for California, and now you're making money. Now
true.
You're making, you know. I don't know if you're making big money yet.
But
you're making a lot more money.
But
you were making a lot more money than you made 2 years ago.
True.
You know? So how do you separate those things? Is it just the vision of what you knew what you wanted? Because a lot of people get caught up in it.
Well, thankfully we play one game a week. You know, it's
that's could be worse.
Yeah, but
although practicing is harder than playing.
A lot of practices and. You know, I had some guys on the team. We had a good core of Italians. Simone Flamini, Marco Cusin, Daniele Cavaliero. And we kind of created this core of guys that, you know, kept an eye on each other.
Right.
So they knew that, you know, hey, let's keep D on check and make sure he doesn't slip out or doesn't do too much. And that helped me a lot. And, you know, also the fact that seeing results, playing well, I would get even more hungry.
Right.
I wanted to work even more. I was that kind of kept my mind in it.
If you can, talk to me a little bit about Alonzo Ford.
Alfonso Ford.
I said Alonzo. I got that Spanish thing going on.
Well,
Alfonso Ford.
Alfonso is a legend in our hometown. He's
right.
Play only one season. Was supposed to, you know, play the second season, but we all know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He had a stellar season. I'm talking about big numbers.
Wow, he's so sick,
and,
man.
The way he did it, how he scored, and, you know, the ease that he used on the court. It was everything about him was unreal for the people in my hometown. And, those years that he was there, I actually was in the States.
Right,
I got to just see him through the TV.
I was going to ask you, never saw him play live.
I would open up my laptop and check the games. And you know, but the buzz in my hometown was huge. And, you know, it was one of the brightest stars we had in Pesaro. It was hurtful to see him go like that, to know that he played through what he had. And still was able to, you know, bless us with so many good performances.
No.
Not only in our hometown, he was a star
everywhere
he went.
I read that in Pesaro, nobody really knew that he had leukemia.
Only the doctor.
Only the team doctor.
Only a team doctor. It was crazy.
I don't get it.
I remember, because I remember watching it on laptop, actually. It was a crucial game in the playoffs. Game four, we play Naples, okay? They're playing Naples, mm-hmm. and Alfonso can't play. They say he got an ankle problem. It smells fishy.
Right.
Because he played throughout the season, and we later found out that he was so out of it, without energy and without strength, that he had to sit out that game to do extra medicine, extra mm-hmm. care, just to play the next one, to play game five. We end up losing, and we lose game four. He comes back game five. He looked like a zombie out there for like three quarters. In the fourth quarter, he goes crazy, scores like 12 points in a row, carried the team to the semifinals of the playoff. And
it's crazy.
Man. Those were the first sign that his body was breaking down. And actually, that summer, that's when the team officials received a letter from Alfonso saying that he could no longer play because he had to deal with some stuff. And it's crazy.
So crazy. I think Euroleague did a great thing by naming the top
Absolutely.
Scorer award after
Absolutely.
Him and tribute to him every year. And his kids come out or whatever. It's really cool. And I saw it along in your profile, and I thought I'd bring it up because I know it seemed like he meant a lot to you, even though, like I said, I was like, I don't think you've actually seen him play, like in person, not in your
not
own
time. Not in person. It's only through a laptop, but, it's – Everybody that plays this game knows who he is and, what he did.
You're in your hometown in Scavolini, in Pesaro, I should say, but on the team Scavolini, during probably one of the most difficult times in Europe for European basketball. There was a world crisis going on, financial crisis. Teams were struggling all over the map. I mean, it was tough to get sponsors. I was looking up, Scavolini had like five or six different sponsors throughout the years that you were there. I don't know the 2 years you were there. I don't know if it was the Banca Marca.
Banca Marca. Well, we were still lucky because the owner, Walter Scavolini, was still with the team.
He was still with the team.
Were the last 2 years.
He was
looking for sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. The whole time. Did that interfere at all with you? Do you guys, as a team going through that, do you feel it? I mean, did you feel it financially, not getting paid? Were there issues?
No, we were great because he actually laid out the foundation to finish, his duty to mm-hmm. finish those 2 years that he had with the team. And he's been an owner since, I don't know, so many years. He's a legend. And, we knew that those were his last year, but we were okay. And actually, in my second season in Pesaro, he gave us a big gift, bringing Jumaine Jones and Ricky Hickman to Pesaro, and those were two, and James White. So we had three big-time Americans coming, and after that year, it's been a struggle. Yeah,
you were young, but you were getting your game on. You scoring 14 points a game the first year. You went down a little bit in 11 in the second year, but it's still balling. I mean, you're 22, 23 years old playing your hometown. Man, that must feel good, dude.
Yeah, it felt great.
You got to be like walking on that cloud,
It felt great. We actually, the second season, we went all the way to the semifinals. We mm-hmm. lost to Milan, but it was a very successful season. And just to be in the locker room with Jumaine and Ricky James, those guys was – we had a good run.
Is while the team's struggling a little bit and find sponsors or whatever, and you probably know a lot of the stuff's going on. Is your thought process like, I want to keep playing, I want to stay at home, I want to play, or do I want to go? I want to get bigger. I want to move on.
No, it was never about the money.
I'm not about the money. Mm-hmm. I just you want to get to a bigger team, or your league team, were those your aspirations, or were you like, I'd rather do this for my hometown?
Honestly, I was so into the good season that we were having that I was not focused on the future. Although I had some phone calls in December and January, mm-hmm. But I try to keep it focused, keep it quiet, and just go about my business with Pesaro. And I would tell those guys, we'll see after the season. And right. We'll decide after the season. I knew somebody was knocking on my door. somebody big was knocking on my door, and but I try to keep my focus on that.
So yeah, let's get right into it. So how hard was it to leave your home and go to Siena, go to Montepaschi, which is, you know, a team now that was at that time was they're not a team struggling to keep their head above water. They're a team that's there.
There was a Final Four team at the time in EuroLeague.
Exactly.
So I mean, that team coming from seven straight Italian League titles, Final Fours, and
so you've basically made two small steps and one huge step now. Because I mean, Benetton and Scavellini was a small step as far as the level of the team was concerned, whatever, where they were playing, and all of a sudden you jump into a team that now you're expected to win.
Yeah, pressure went through the roof.
Yeah. So I mean, it's, you know, it's not the same scoring 11, 12 points a game in Scavellini as it is scoring 11, 12 points a game in Montepaschi, you know?
No, it's not.
How did you accept that? I mean, you take that as a challenge? Did it make you work harder? Did it make you want to do more? Did it make you take a back seat, you know, because you're on a team with a lot more players?
Well, actually, I kind of try to come into it and understanding where I was, understanding the system and the culture that they had there. Mm-hmm. They had a winning culture. It was a big reason why I chose to go there. Because I wanted to be a winner, mm-hmm. and I wanted to win titles, and it was a struggle early on. It was not easy to adjust, not easy to change roles.
Right.
But you know, I realized that they brought me in to produce, to play, to be myself, and actually that was one of the best seasons of my career. Dude, it turned out to be one of the best seasons of my career.
look, let me get into it. You played 22 EuroLeague games, you played 46 combined games. You got some pretty decent numbers, but you show up when it matters. Super Cup, you guys win the championship. Italian Cup, you guys win the championship. You win the Italian League. Hold on a second, people that are listening on the crossover. The guy that's sitting in front of me didn't only win those three tournaments. He was MVP in all three of them in your first year with the big team. Dude, that's huge.
I don't think he's never done before. I don't brag about it a lot, but this.
I'll brag about it for you. Let me brag about it for you. I didn't know that. And I mean, I don't think many people know that. When I looked it up, I was like, and I'm looking at all these things with you because, you know, it takes me a long time to do this research and everything. And I'm looking, and I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. I started writing it down. Yeah. And I'm like, those are the same years.
You know what happened is, once I tasted victory.
This is your first championship.
This is my first year with a big team.
Right.
You know, the first trophy was the Italian Cup. It was 2013 February. We win the top eight, the final eight.
Okay.
We win this, and I had great performances. Okay, we take the MVP and we take the cup, and I was like, man, I really can do this. Yeah. I really understood how to win trophies, and you know, that carry on to the playoff. It's like a shark that smells some blood.
Yeah.
I wanted to go after the next trophy and the next one.
I was telling you before, I do a lot of speaking. A lot of other things I like to talk about are opportunities. You know what I mean? Like you, as a person, you have to recognize the opportunity. See it, then you got to kind of seize that day and take advantage of that opportunity. Which one of these do you think was your opportunity? Was it that year? Was it the couple of years? I mean, obviously opportunities come all the time.
Yeah.
But like you said, now you thought you can do it because you got MVP. But before that, were you like, I'm like, man, as soon as I get the month of passion, I'm doing it. Dude, this is going to be my team. This is going to be my thing. It's easy to say that stuff, but it's not easy to do what you did.
It kind of clicked. It kind of clicked at one point. You know, our system was built to win. Mm-hmm. Some great players around me. Bobby Brown, David Moss, Matt Zenning. You know, it's crazy to go back and think about it.
I mean, can you actually look back and believe it? Because I mean, winning MVP, winning titles is something you fight for. Winning MVP just comes when it has. I mean, you're not thinking like, man, when I get the Super Cup, I'm going to win the MVP. When I get to the Italian League, you know, you don't think that stuff. When you look back at it, how'd you sweep all three of them?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it just kind of happened. And you know, the team had supreme confidence in what I was doing. Coach, you know, gave me the green light to attack any possible situation on the court. And, you know, I worked a lot. You know, I remember me and Bobby Brown, we had 30 to 45 minute sessions after practice every day. Just stay and shoot and work
for kids to hear
and
this stuff.
That's another gym rat. Bobby was an unbelievable guide for me to you know, to follow and to work with, and you know, that's how it happened.
Now you're the man in Siena. I mean, you know, you married at the time?
No.
You're running the show then. You're running the show in Siena, man. Come on, don't worry about it. She's not jealous now. So the next year, what the hell happened? You played nine EuroLeague games, right?
Yeah, financial problems, man. Like you said
before. Was that it?
Yeah. The bank cracked down. The main sponsor, Montepaschi, cracked down, and our owner came to the locker room and pretty much said that this was going to be the last season of his sponsorship, that he was going to move on to do other things. We were behind in payments, which didn't affect me, but I remember one game, we were playing in Cantu. Mm-hmm. I have a good game. It was December. After the game, Mr. Minucci comes to the locker room, and he was like, "I gotta put you on the market, or we don't have enough money to finish the season." I'm like, After the year I just had, the second season there with the team, and you know, I was like, "Wait." I was like, "Let's make a deal."
Because you don't want to go.
I don't want to go. I wanted to stay for the city. I was at the time in love with Siena,
the fans. You were running the show.
And that was my team. Yeah. You know, the second season really became my team. And
single guy, three MVPs with the dreads, man, the good-looking guy. Come on.
We were on a hunt to go to a top 16 in EuroLeague.
Right.
And I told the owner, I was like, "Look, if we go to the top 16, I'm staying, and you're going to pay off everybody, and we're going to finish this season. If we fail to reach top 16, then you can sell me to whoever you want." December 19th, my birthday.
That's your birthday too. Happy birthday.
In or out game against Malaga in our house. If we win, we're in the top 16. Jason Granger floater.
Wait, he agreed with the deal then?
He agreed with the deal. Jason Granger is a floater, a running floater from, I don't know, 3-point line. Goes in, we lose, and
you're out.
And next thing you know is I'm on my way to Milano.
Just like that. So I'm assuming the deal was already set. It was just a matter of...
Well, the owner went for the bigger bank.
Yeah, but
he accepted the bigger deal. I had on, you know, Galatasaray at the time.
Right.
Cesca actually gave us a call and told us at the end of the season we will take you. But they wanted the deal in December. And Milan came and, you know.
But I think you know as well as I do that deal was set no matter if you won or lost that game, right?
These are inside that I can't tell you. But to be honest now, if we advance, I'll stay.
You would stay.
If we advance, I'll stay.
No, yeah. It sounds to me like that deal was on the table. These are things that don't happen very often in Europe. This is in the NBA, where, you know, you get traded halfway through the season. There's a trade deadline, all that other stuff. I mean, it can happen here, but it doesn't happen very often. How hard is that, man? You went through preseason with your team. The other team went through preseason together, you know, Olympia Milan.
It was bad because it was a couple of summers that I turned down Milan offers, and the fans and the media knew about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, already. After Pesaro, they wanted me.
So you weren't that well-liked either.
And also, you know, eliminating them from the playoff the year before, I was kind of like the villain in Milan.
Right.
And the fans really, really hated me out there. So the way I arrived to Milano was like, oh, okay, here's this guy that refuses us for 2 years. Now he's going to come and be the savior.
Because he's got nothing else to do.
Because his team is, right. You know, his financial
problem. But you can't blame him.
I can't blame him, but you know that that's how the people think. Right. And some were excited, others were not. And but, you know, I did end up in Milano, and, you know, the rest is history.
No, you guys won the championship that year.
We took the championship after.
You went back-to-back? You went back-to-back on two different teams?
We went back-to-back with two different
teams.
With
the Italian league, anyways.
Yeah. We brought the championship in Milan after 18 years, and this was historical for the city of Milan. We were very close to go to the Final Four. We lost in the playoffs to Maccabi Tel Aviv, which mm-hmm. ended up winning the title right. that year. And we had a great run that year.
Are you in the right spot at the right time? Or are you getting lucky? Or
I don't know. I think
everything in life has a little bit of luck involved in it.
I like to think that everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. But for sure, I had my part of good luck and, you know, being on the right spot.
You were there, was Olympia or was Armani? Armani? It was Armani at the time when you were there, right? I mean, because I'm thinking I could even be like good, like well dressed in that team. You know, I think even that it had to be cool to play for that team.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I remember that.
If they could dress a big ugly guy like me, man.
We had a lot of photo shoot, and you know, just to meet you know, Mr. Armani was unreal. Mm. He's such a such a good guy, good person.
And everybody says that.
He's very humble and very generous. And, you know, it was fun just being in Milan. First year that I go out of the small town to go to a metropolis, a big
right.
town.
Mm-hmm. The big city, man.
Yeah, big city, big troubles. And, it was another successful steps, even though it didn't end up the way I wanted, because the second season was pretty bad.
Yeah, I was going to get that. Mm-hmm. Get knocked out of the top 16. You guys, the win. After all the success, does that year – I mean, it's got to be – it's that much harder to live through a year like that where things just didn't go right when so much is expected from you.
It started bad, and I have my share of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. During the summer, I had an issue with the national team, with the Italian national team.
I've tried not to bring that up. Yeah, I've heard of it. Okay, I've had people tell my producer, Giacomo.
It's part of my story.
So I was going to touch on it to see where you went with it. But.
Yeah, the issue ended up that I was, you know, I got suspended until February, and I could only play EuroLeague games. I could not play in the Lega Basket game. Because of the federation. And this put the team in an unbalanced situation. You know, right. I would go and play 25 minutes in EuroLeague, and then they had to change. And I was a distraction for them. And this my responsibility. One of my biggest regret that I have in my career for, you know, doing wrong like that.
You did something wrong to cause the suspension?
I say it will 50-50.
50-50.
50-50.
But you didn't do anything to prevent it either, is what you're pretty much trying to say.
I'm a pretty stubborn guy. When I see dark, I see dark, and I just go about my business. Mm-hmm. And for sure, I should have ended the situation better. But, you know, all I was asking was, you know, to have some care for a player that was asking not to be called up, and, you know, to have a free summer. But their plans were a little bit different. And, you know, but this is the past. It happened. It was an experience that I learned from. And, you know, I moved on from that.
Mm-hmm. But you also accept responsibility.
I accept responsibility. Yeah. I had my fair share of excuses that I made to everybody.
And, you got to defend.
At the end of the year, unfortunately, we don't win the title, so it was time to move on, and there was no teams left in Italy, man. It was time to go to Europe.
That's what I was there. I said, this is the first time out of your comfort zone, but you really weren't going anywhere else after that. I mean, you had to go somewhere outside of Italy, and you end up in Greece.
Yeah, I signed with Rade Filipovic. It was time to sign with a big agent. And I told Rade, come on, man, take me somewhere
big. Give me somewhere big. What's that first, Olympiacos Panathinaikos game like?
You know, it's difficult to describe. I walked into Oaxaca the first time.
Your first game was, your first Olympiacos Panathinaikos game was at Oaxaca?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That even makes it more interesting.
I walked into Oaxaca. The boos and the whistles and the green lasers and the smoke. And this is before even the warm-up.
Right.
Just to, you know, go out and shoot.
It's crazy.
My knees started shaking. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. I like, this is something that I never seen in my life. This is a crazy environment. And, of course, then the game start and then the bombs behind the bench and the fireworks and the smoke and... I actually loved it. I mean,
it's great, isn't it?
It's crazy. Some guys really dislike that environment.
Once you get through that fear, that initial fear of like, man, I might not make it out of here, then it's really exciting to play in that kind of atmosphere. I loved it.
It is.
I loved
it. Every time out, there was some type of fireworks, firecracker behind our bench. And, you know, my first reaction was like, so I got to get up. And our assistant coach, Milan Tomis, was like, where are you going? Sit down. This is normal. Stay down. I'm like, this is normal. A bomb just exploded behind me. But hey, that was typical of the Greek. But you know, there's no country like Greece as far as love for the game and passion and madness, and those fans are on both sides. On both sides, Pana and Olympiacos were crazy. It was great.
I'm gonna go back real quick to Milan, because even though you know you put some blame on yourself, and I feel like everywhere you've been, you've had the luck or the, I don't know if I want to use the word luck, you've had the ability to capture the crowds. I mean, it just seems like everybody loves you for some reason. I don't know if it's the hairdo, I don't know if it's your attitude, I don't know if it's the way you play the game. I don't know what it is. There's something abstract about you that people seem to gravitate towards your personality. And when you're a quiet kid, I mean, now I'm talking to you, you're not so quiet. I see you're not so quiet, but on the court, your demeanor is just kind of like, so what do you think it is that is given these fans, like, they love you?
I think it's my fighter mentality, maybe. My hustle, the passion that a lot of times I show, and, you know, those, you know, that's my way, that's myself, is my way of playing. Of playing the game, I don't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe when I was a kid, I remember my dad used to take me to the playground to play against men, older people, and I had to hustle, I had to get beat up, I had to fight, I had to scrap, and that carried on. It's part of my DNA. That's how I play, and I think people appreciate that. Just like they appreciate somebody who can score 40 points, they appreciate somebody who can go out and fight and scrap and put his face on another guy's face to, you know.
I have a just a tiny theory about that, man. I think like your time in the States has something to do with that too. And I'm not saying that America's bad or whatever. Don't let everybody get carried away or what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is I think that, you know, how in Europe, you're brought up in these federated programs and so forth and so on. In America, you're brought up in your grammar school, your high school, and it's like you defend them colors. And, you know, for those 4 years that you're at that school, man, that's no matter what, that's your team. And I think that we have the capability sometimes. I had the same thing I think that you did. When you come over here, like, okay, I played in two years in Malaga. For those 2 years, man, Malaga was I bled their colors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when I went to Victoria, I bled red, you know what I mean? It was just that. And I think playing in the States is what gives you that ability to just, like, defend and, like you said, scrap. And if I need to get face-to-face, I get face-to-face with it. If I need to score 20, I'll score 20. Just tell me what I need to do, and I'll do it. You know, I think it has a little bit to do with that, but that's just my thought process. Tell me about the injury, man.
Wow.
I'm going to skip right over the fact that you guys didn't have a great year in Olympiacos, but you did win the title that year in Greece. I'm going to skip over that because I got the most important part was that Panathinaikos game.
You skipped one of the two biggest shots of Spanouli's career, man. In Oaxaca. Wow.
Oh, tell me about it, then.
Nah, I mean, it's,
I don't want to skip that.
He has so many.
I know, because he's my boy, man. I love me some Billy.
Greek finals, he show up big time, game two and game four.
My question was, did you play them in the finals?
Yeah, we played them in the finals. Yeah,
one thing is to play them one game. Another thing is play them a five-game finals.
Playing
man.
A five-game finals was Diamantidis last season. And Spanoulis against Diamantidis.
And he just left.
Wait,
Spanoulis just left Panathinaikos, didn't he?
A few years previously.
It was a couple years.
Yeah,
okay.
But, you know, I'm sitting in the corner and, you know, it's overtime. It's game four. We in Oaxaca, you know, 20,000 people screaming, laughing, you know, everything. It was crazy. I'm sitting there and we down two. We got the ball, Spanoulis against Diamantidis. Like, that's a movie. I'm watching a movie, and I'm on the court.
You're on the court watching it. And, yeah. You know, we're always told as players, don't become spectators.
Exactly. But, man, I mean, I'm watching two titans going at it and, you know, hit a big shot and we win the title. And that was history. But, you know, you want to talk about the
no, injury. No. I love that. I love that. Because anytime I can talk about Spanoulis, man, I love it. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, his days are dwindling a little bit. He knows, everybody knows it. But, man, he's one of the greatest, man. He's one of the greatest ever played this game. I walked up to him a few years back when the Final Four was here in Madrid. And I just looked at him. I said, look, man, I still got a little bit of player in me.
Yeah.
And I just don't walk up to anybody and tell them that I love them. I said, you are the man, dude. Yeah. I love the way you play the game.
And for me, just being on a daily practice with him, to live what it's like to play and practice with him was a blessing.
Guys like
also
him.
Also to go and go against Diamantidis a lot.
Diamantidis, Juan Carlos Navarro. Yeah. Those guys were just killers, man. They just come out rip a game from you. All right, talk to me about the play, man.
Okay, it was December 9th, man.
I want you to know that I have all these questions written down, and we're way off track and everything. We're on track, but I'm all over the place.
Is this going too far?
No. As long as you're good.
It's supposed to go.
Yeah. Okay, as long as you're good. I'd like to get at least an hour out of you.
Okay, that's great. December 9th.
Everybody remembers the play.
Yeah.
No matter what.
We up 20. In
We
up 20 in a EuroLeague game against Unix Kazan. I'm playing against my old teammate Keith Langford.
Mm-hmm. I love me some Keith.
So, man. I want to, you know, he kind of started.
He was my favorite interview almost, man.
he started to like dance with the ball and started shake and bake. And I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna give you a bucket now. You know, I'm gonna get this stop. No matter, we up 20 with 3 minutes to go. You know, I'm like, F that. You're not going to score on me. And he drove left.
Hey, I interviewed Bobby Dixon a few weeks ago, man. Yeah. You can say whatever you want. after interviewing my man, don't worry about it. You can drop the F-bomb.
So he drives left, and I contain him. He kind of gave me a little shoulder bump, you know, right into my chest. And
that's what he does?
Yeah, and took a step back, you know, and was ready to pull up. And I planted my foot to go and contest the shot, and this part of my foot hits the little circle in the mm-hmm. how you call it those stickers that they have,
yeah.
And it was a little bit dusty, and you know the foot went one way, the leg went the other way, so I kind of did a split, and you know felt a big pop.
Did you know in the second?
I didn't know. I actually thought I thought I pulled my muscle. I was like, for sure, I pulled my hamstring 100%. This is a hamstring pull. But then when I sat there and I was waiting for the doctors to come in, I realized I couldn't move by myself. I couldn't get up. The leg was dead. And
I mean, did you think you were paralyzed?
No. I mean, but I knew something was big.
Right.
And when they brought me out, I couldn't walk. I couldn't walk back to the bench. They carried me, and the spasms were so strong that you know they had to you know give me shots to calm down. And you know, part of the muscle that attaches to your butt bone, it was all the way down to my knee. So my hamstring detached from my hip.
So it's kind of like what happens when that calf pulls away when the tendon snaps up, same thing, but up there.
Yeah, the tendon of my hamstring
just snapped
off
and
my hip.
Rolled
down towards my knee and took down the whole hamstring.
Give my crossover listeners, because I've seen five or six different diagnoses of this injury. What exactly was it? Do you have it? Some people say you ruptured this, the bicep, something.
It's called hamstring tendon rupture.
Hamstring tendon rupture.
Yeah.
And detached. Okay, there we go. Now we got the five. We got the word
hamstring
from...
Hamstring tendon rupture and detachment.
It sounds like they don't really have a name for it, but you did so...
I think they do have a name, but I'm not even going to go look
at it. You did so many things, man. They didn't know what to call it.
Yeah.
It's amazing how fragile an athlete's life is.
Just like that, man. Just like that. Yeah. It was my contract year.
Yeah. That's the thing. We're going to get to that in a second. Yeah. But it's amazing. It's, when you think about it, it's like, man, just, you know, you're up 20 on top of it. Yeah. And you're just trying to like, all right, Keith, I know you're going to try to score on me. You're going to try to get some buckets. You're going to try to get your numbers at the end of the game when you're down 20. I'm gonna try to shut you down.
Stubborn.
And you're just playing.
My stubbornness got me.
Yeah. But it's your pride, too.
It's my pride, for sure, yeah.
And that little slip on that thing, I mean, almost ended your career. I mean,
yeah, it was a close call, man. Close call. I go back, get different diagnoses from different doctors, and
anybody tell you?
Yeah, some of them were like,
"You ain't playing again.
This might not work." It was like, "This might not work for you," and you know, we had to reattach your tendon. But if that tendon, you know, when it came off, if it damaged the bone, there's no way we can reattach it. So that's
it. There's nowhere to reattach it.
So for like 48 hours, I was in tears. I was like, man, this might be it. I couldn't believe it.
I've never had a serious injury like that. But
no,
but
it was pretty serious. It was pretty rare injury. But you know, I trusted the doctor that I went to back in Italy. Of course, I did some research. And
how many operations? Just one?
Yeah, one operation.
Just one major operation?
And then 7 months rehab, yeah.
It seems to me like 7 months isn't much. I mean, because we all know the story. Now you leave Olympiacos and you go to Bros. I'm going to try to run through this a little bit quicker so I can get you to bed here. So you got a big game.
No, it's just okay.
But to me, it's just the fragility of an athlete's life. And it doesn't happen very often. We know it doesn't. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, yeah.
It doesn't happen very often. But, you know, and just a stupid little play like that, you know, and you got to spend 48 hours. And I'm sure you spent more than 48 hours thinking you weren't going to come back and play.
Oh, yeah. Even after the surgery, to be honest, there was a period where,
right,
where
that's what I mean.
I went dark.
Yeah.
I went dark. I couldn't see the light. It was only pool work. It was only training room. I couldn't see the ball. I couldn't see the court. I couldn't run. I could barely walk. I'm like, this is not going to get better, man.
The problem with rehab that a lot of people that never played the game is it's mentally more challenged than it is physically.
100%.
You know, you have to physically work harder than you've ever worked in your life, but mentally it's destroying you as you go along.
I think at that point of my career is when I met depression for the first time.
Mm-hmm. You went into depression.
Oh, yes. I'm not ashamed to say it because, you know, now they're making it a huge deal in the NBA and, you know, mental health and all that. At that point, I realized it's not enough to go and get treatment and do rehab for my leg. I gotta snap out of it. Mm-hmm. I need my mind right. I'm not thinking right.
But man, when you start going down that negative road, it's hard to get.
It's bad.
Number one, I'm thinking you're thinking about those 28 credit hours that you just did.
Oh, man.
That's the first thing popping in my head. Like, damn, I should have got those other 28 credit hours. Number two, I'm thinking, who was around? Who helped you through these times? I mean, I'm imagining family. I'm imagining friends.
Family and friends early on. But sometimes it's not good enough.
No, it's you. It's
my
you
my therapy was, it started when I could touch the basketball again. When I could see the court and see some progress.
About when was that? Because Olympiacos was at the Final Four that year.
Yeah,
and Olympiacos you were with the team.
I got hurt in December. Olympiacos brought me back to Athens in April.
After you weren't playing.
No, I was not.
Yeah, there wasn't.
I was done. But you know, I wanted to go back and be with the team and do the second part of my rehab in Athens, and it was around that time that I started feeling better. Started feeling better, started seeing progress. April, in June, I started actually to jog and run. And in July, I kind of made a crazy decision and went with the national team. And, you know, it was, they also helped me a lot with the rehab. And I was back on the court playing Eurobasket 2015.
But that rehab is like a roller coaster ride, man, because you know, you could spend a day where you're like, damn, I felt good today. Then also your 3 days were like, man, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore.
Well, I'm sure every athlete handles things differently. For myself, being away from the game, being away from the gym was challenging. My daughter was just born in September, so we had to make adjustments. You know, I was a father, but not playing basketball anymore. It was a lot of changes, and that was a big challenge in my career that I think I managed to get through. It was not easy, but I did.
The first time you started to play again was. Not play games, practice.
It was
5-on-5.
August,
like,
yeah.
With
late,
the national
late
team.
July, late with the July. National team. Yeah, it's about 8 months from my.
You had no contract because.
No, I was in negotiation with Brozia.
Okay. Olympiacos, any hard feelings?
Listen.
You feel like you know.
The hard feeling is that I didn't want to leave. I wanted another chance. I didn't want my career in Olympiacos to finish like that. That was my big regret. But I understood the team decision to not sign me back. You know, they didn't want to take that gamble.
I think I know you already. You're pissed though.
A little bit. But you know, that's business decision that they made.
You can say anything you want about the Greeks, man. They're my highest public, man. They're the guys that listen to us the most.
they know I wanted to be back. They know I love Olympiacos. I love Athens and Greece, and I wanted to be bad, very bad. But hey, you know, I had to
move on.
It's
a business.
It's a business, and they made a business decision. Yeah.
And you go to Brose, and I mean. Wait, let me, before you get to Brozzi, my big thing is always with the injuries. The mental part is the hardest part to get back from. The physical part, you could say, okay, you know, I've rehabbed, I've done my 8 months, I've done my year, I've done whatever it takes me to get back and rehab. No matter how minor, no matter how major the injury is, obviously the mental part is, it escalates when, as the injury gets more and more severe. I mean, you slipped on a dusty piece of sticker.
Exactly. I was not the only one.
Yeah, but
I remember a lot of players had this problem.
Yeah, but you had the bad luck to get hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But the issue is that when you get back on that court, I mean, mentally, I mean, it's hard, man. It's hard to, like, get your feet under you. I mean, you know.
I'm crazy enough to not think about that stuff.
Really?
Yeah, come on. It's I
mean, after eight, nine months, look what happened. Yeah. I mean, Jason. I love Jason Graynes. You talked about Jason before, man. Mm-hmm. How hard has it had to be for someone
for
like
sure.
Jay, man?
For sure.
You know, hurt last year, rehabs all the way back in the first 3 minutes of a game.
I'm sure you will come back stronger, but.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not. I mean,
there's some things you can't control, and for me, I think the more you think about injuries, the more you know. Knock on wood, and you know, it could happen. So the less you put your mind into that stuff, the better it is.
I'm gonna go through Brose quick because you had a good year. You had an amazing year for coming back the way you did. You mentioned that
Coach Trinchieri,
you were like so thankful.
Yeah.
That he. Do you think he took a chance on you? I mean, you don't think that way, obviously.
I think he was.
You think he did the right thing?
I think he was intrigued into coaching me. He's like a
he'd never
psychologist
coached you before anywhere.
He's like a genius
I love
of the
him,
game.
Man. And I'm dying to interview him.
Yeah, I actually miss him because he's the way he sees the game, how he talks to players. He got that genius in him, and he was really intrigued into coaching me and in my personality. And he was like, "Come here, we're gonna get you right physically, mentally, and we're gonna give you a chance." And that's what happened.
You averaged 10 points a game, man.
That's not bad in EuroLeague.
No. Yeah, 24 minutes a game. Yeah. And I'm thinking you owe this guy, that you owe this club something. And you get up and leave, my man. This is going to be my hard part of the interview for you.
Hey, there was a buyout in the contract. And you know, a bigger team came and, you know, asked for me. And they say, it's your choice.
I'm all about it. I'm all about it. You got to go. I mean, we got 10, 12 years to play this game.
I had to go.
You
got to
get whatever you can get when you can get it. I'm all about that.
Okay.
But it's an emotional decision, too.
Okay, yes. I like Bamberg. I like Brosen. You know,
there's some great fans up there.
Great fans, yeah. And I had a great time. And I'm so thankful that they gave me a chance and they let me rock out and ball that way. But, man, Cesca come and knock at the door.
You mentioned they already knocked on your door one time.
You know what happened? It was June. I get the call from my agent. It's like, Cesca is ready to take you with them. I cried.
You cried?
I cried. I couldn't believe it.
Are you thinking because of the injury that you've gone to the pinnacle and now, and I'm not, and please, nobody get this wrong about Brosi Basket, but, you know, coming from Olympiacos, you've went up the scale, the ladder.
Yeah.
And now do you feel like you're coming down on the other side because now all of a sudden it's Olympiacos Brosi, and because of the injury, you might be going further and further? Because you know we're a piece of meat in the long run.
To be honest, okay, Brosa is a small market, smaller town, but I see EuroLeague. It's a team competing EuroLeague. That doesn't make any difference to me.
Right.
That year, we ended up in front of Efes, in front of Malaga, in front of Valencia,
Brosa is one of my favorite teams ever because they fought every
Brosa
game.
Brosa at the time was a good team. They went and, you know, Wanamaker took off from there. Melli took off from there. Daniel Theis took off from there. Strelnieks took off from there.
Your character fits perfectly with that type of play, with that type of game, and that type of city.
Yeah.
I mean, you just fit into that place.
I think I always felt comfortable playing in small town that are passionate about basketball. And it was time. Cesca came and called.
And you showed up at the right time.
Oh, man.
Look.
Took me 2 weeks to realize if it was true. I kept calling Rade, are you serious? Like, you're not joking. No, wait, we're putting things together. We're talking to the car. I'm like, Rade, is it true? Tell me is it true or not.
Don't do this to me,
Don't
Randall.
Do this
yeah.
to me, Rade.
I love it. And at this point, you're going there with what kind of mentality? You're like, just anything you want, I'll do for you. Because Coach Attudis is, I mean, he's a great coach. He showed it last year in the Final Four. But he's got great vision of players, and he's got a great ability to find the team players, the right players. You know, I talked to Corey the other day. Corey was a nobody out here in Europe when Coach Attudis signed him. Will Clyburn, love Will. Love me some Will. But he was a chance too because Will, although he was at Derdo Shafaka and played decent, he didn't look like a Cesca player. You don't look like a Cesca player. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
But he sees the potential of the team and fitting everybody in.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you definitely fit in for him.
They were looking for a specific player, a specific character, a specific body. And I was the one.
You're lucky then.
You can say it. You can say it loud.
You need luck to get by in this world, but you got to be good to be lucky.
It's a thin line with Coach System. Mm-hmm. He wants specific players. He likes big bodies, big guards. And at the time, they were coming off a Final Four disappointment previous year.
A couple of them.
And they were looking for a spark, for somebody that can come in the locker room, bring his character, bring energy, and buy into the system, play his role, work hard.
That's the easiest thing for you.
It was
that's
easy.
That's like telling an actor go play themselves.
Yeah. And, and I said, yeah, you know, when I talked to Coach, I was like, yes, Coach, I'm ready. He asked me, are you ready? Because if you're not ready, tell me. I'm going after somebody else.
Well, yeah, and, what are you going to say? No.
Oh, no, man.
No, Coach, I'm not ready yet. Call me next year. Look, just so you know that I spent my time with you because I've done my research and I've done my work. I've been I can finally get you cleared off my damn cachet. I got Daniel Hackett all over. My wife thinks I'm like cheating on her with you or something. You know, I got your picture all over the place. But I went over your numbers last year because you were the man in Final Four. I mean, Will was MVP. You did so many intangibles in those two games, especially the final game. That when I announce these games and I comment them, I mean, I see that. You know, like I said, you in the beginning, you didn't hide from me. Mm-hmm. You know, you hide from everybody else all year long. You didn't hide from me in the end. Just to go over the numbers so people understand, you play in the championship game, you play 24 minutes and 18. I don't think you know these stats. You played 24 minutes and 18 seconds in that game against Efes. You played 35 EuroLeague games the whole entire season last year. You averaged 17 minutes and 20 seconds. And there's only five occasions throughout the whole year that you actually played more than 24 minutes in a game until that last damn game. And that's where when you were MVP and Italian Cup and the Super Cup and every damn other cup you won that year, that's where your experience came in. That's where it came up because Coach Adudis, I think, he saw it, man, you made that damn that bump play, the and one. I got to watch this game with Kyle like 2 months ago. We actually sat down, him in Moscow, me in Madrid, and we were on camera with each other talk about it. And your name came up the whole time, man. To me, you were the key of the final.
It's, first of all, it was a blessing to be there.
No, I'm sure it is.
It's a blessing to be here now with this club. But, you know, most of it has been about the ride. It's been about the journey. It's been about the every.
Sound like Higgins, man. It sounded like the every day. Like C. Higgs. The journey.
It's been about the every day, and you know the build up for that moment, and you know it's once I got past the beginning stage, the early months where I was pretty passive. I was passing the ball. I was not aggressive. Things changed, and you know, at the end of the day, we were all leaders. As other guys said, and we had 15 leaders in last year's team, and everybody brought little piece to the table, and that's how you become champions.
Yeah, I think everybody talks about the demons in Cheska with the Final Four and Olympiacos losses, the Maccabi loss, everything else. And you guys, when they won in 2016, I think it was, or no, 13, 14, I don't remember what year it was.
16 in Berlin.
In Berlin. When they won that year, they didn't get rid of the demons because they lost. They were winning by 20, and they almost lost that. They should have lost that game. Last year, y'all got rid of the demons.
Yeah.
Last year, when you're all down by 11 or 12, the Madrid in the semifinal game, and then when because like I said, I watched that game with Kyle again. When you're announcing the game, you don't really follow the score so much. You mm-hmm. do. You know what the score is because you know the moment. But you tend to forget about things that happen along the way because you're so busy doing other things. Man, they kept coming at you guys. They just kept coming at you. It was like a boxing match, man. Every time they threw a punch, they would hit you first, but then you guys would get right back up off the ground and come back at them. And I think that was the most character I've ever seen in a team in a final because Efes had everything going for them in that game.
Cinderella story.
Yeah.
With no disrespect because they were really, really good.
Yeah. They
still is.
And the only reason why they were a Cinderella story because they went last.
Exactly.
They went from
that
last.
That was the only reason.
They're not Cinderella.
They're not Cinderella.
That was a damn good team.
That was a good
Cinderella's
team.
Cinderella's an okay team, so-so team that runs the league. Not you could call it Cinderella story, but it's not a Cinderella team. That was a squad, and it still is a squad. But y'all just, you took every punch and you just went back at them. It was just an awesome game, man.
I think people tend to forget how successful CSKA has been. They talk a lot about the finals that they lost. They don't talk enough about the eight titles that they have, man. It's not easy to win every year.
Look, man.
It's the hardest thing to do.
You've been lucky enough not to lose one of these yet.
Okay, man. Okay,
you've been lucky enough not to lose one of these
yet. Knock on wood. Maybe it will happen.
Maybe it won't happen. Maybe it won't. But I can honestly say that when I look back on my games, I look back much more on the ones that I lost mm-hmm. than the ones that I won. Because the ones that you lost, you just hate. You know, they stick with you forever, man.
You got to put them behind, though.
Nah, man, I can't.
Next
I
possession.
I could, yeah,
next game.
That's easy during the game. Talk to me 20 years from now, man. We'll sit down one more time when you're a legend. You know, you're a legend. Look, this is like a 10-month battle, this damn EuroLeague season. The wins, the losses, the travel, the coaches bitching at you all the time, all the outside forces, the press trying to take the team down at times when you guys lose a couple games in a row, personal issues, family issues, all this stuff. When you get it and you win it and you're there, and I'm still mad at your boy Sir Kyle Hines, because every time I text him after you guys win it, he ignores my damn text messages. I told Corey that the other day. What's the party like, man? Let my listeners in on just a little bit, little tidbit.
Oh, it's
come on. Are you a guy?
It really felt good to get it done. It felt great to get it done for the club, for the people, for the trainers, for the doctors, for the people that work at the gym, for the fans. That's the most satisfying.
It's the crossover, man. Stop being so politically correct. Tell me about the party, man. No one's giving me. Corey's the last person.
You want to know about the party?
Just a little quick tidbit, man. If y'all win it this year, I'm following.
The party
you
was flashy. Everybody threw on their shades and dressed up well. Our Cesca dance team is pretty awesome. So they, they came and showed up and they did their thing. And
there you go. That's what we like.
We had a lot of fun. And, the Russians party hard, man. I thought Italians party hard, but,
man.
It was
I got Lithuanian blood in me, man. When I went to Russia and I learned about those shots of vodka, man, cheers and everything, dude.
But, if you know our president, he's very demanding. He's very professional. But you get it done. He'll throw a nice party for you. He's very generous.
Well, let's hope I get invited this year.
Hey, let's hope there's some more.
Quick personal stuff to get you out of here. Where do you call home now? I mean, you've been everywhere.
Pesaro.
That's home.
Pesaro, Italy is my home.
When you're done playing, you going? Is that where you?
I think I will go back there. My wife, my mother. The rest of the family, most of the friends are there.
Your wife's from there. Does she live in Russia with you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your baby?
And my daughter. Yeah.
How old's your daughter now?
She just turned three.
You know, my daughter sometimes my daughter who's 26 sometimes listens to these podcasts, and the last time I can't remember who I was talking to, I dogged her a little bit because we talked about how rough daughters are, but enjoy her now. Enjoy your now, because they get older, man.
I know. I don't want to think about.
I love you, Tess. You know you're my girl, but you know how much suffering he's gonna have to do over the next 20 years of his life. They're great until about 12, man. Girls are great until about 12. The boys are like the hard ones until about 12 because they break their arms and legs and get in trouble, and then they just go out and play basketball. Like you and I did. The girls are like the little dolls and stuff until like 12 or 13. Then it's over, dude. Good luck. Good luck to you and your wife. You want to coach?
I would like to coach younger kids.
I see you. I saw you in that Red Bull video.
Yeah.
That's in Pesaro.
That's in Pesaro. Yeah, I try to do a lot in the summer to get the kids involved.
With the Scavolini club, with the old club?
No, just in general. Just bringing together people, try to do cool stuff. Last year, I had a collaboration with Jumpman, with Jordan. Mm-hmm. We did a basketball tournament. Camps for the kids, coaches clinic. Every summer I try to do a lot just to give back to my hometown, and it's fun.
It's
actually got
man.
To work with Red Bull, got to work with Jordan at some after parties, at some cool stuff for the kids. Brought out some Jordan kicks for everybody. It's good stuff.
That's Corey Higgins' godfather.
Hey. Corey don't like to talk about it.
Yeah,
that.
I know.
For 1 year, I was next to him in the locker room, and never once I attempted to talk about MJ because I know that he don't like to talk about
Kyle,
MJ.
Kyle warned me ahead of time. I texted Kyle. I'm like, hey, give me some inside information on Corey. That was the first thing he told me. So I said, all right, man, I'll keep it down. I respect that. I'm not one of those journalists that likes to get too much into it. Your dad is still at USC. Is he coaching?
No. He was a strength coach for time.
And, he's not doing that anymore.
He does the personal training team.
Okay.
Personal.
How often do you see him now?
Once a year. Oh, twice actually. He comes out to visit me in the winter for about 2 weeks, and then I try to go back in the summer to LA.
Who who's come into your life like during injury and during your career and it made like that impact on you? You know, is there that one person, that coach, that I mean, it could be a wife, could be a family member, could be, is there anybody who just like, man, you know, I don't know if I'd be here if it wasn't for that person.
Well, for sure, my father was a big map to follow. Mm-hmm. He's a guide, somebody that, you know, he doesn't invade my space, but he says good things at the right time.
Yeah.
And that's been a blessing for me to have. My mother's always been caring, so I would have to say the family, my mm-hmm. wife. The way she supports me, the way she helped me.
Was she there through the injury?
That's
huge.
You know, the love that she has, that we share.
Italian girl?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How she's patient with me through my up and down. And, you know, she gave me a beautiful daughter.
Which, there you go. I'll
go crazy about her.
They kill you, man, yeah. I'm telling you. Superstitions? Before games?
No, I try to go about my routine.
Do you?
I don't know if you want to call it superstitious, but, you know, it's more about...
To me, the routine is somewhat... if you break that routine, are you like, oh, man?
No, I don't panic like
that. It's not a superstition, though. No. When the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague sends out that schedule in the beginning of the year...
18 teams.
And you look at it. Jesus. I don't care if they're 16, 18, 20.
Hey, how many? 18.
Yeah, the more teams, the better, man. More
for
games,
you guys.
Damn
for
right,
For you
man.
Guys, not
Come
for
on.
Us.
But you want to go back to once-a-week games and practice twice a day?
Man.
Tell me the truth. You want to go back to once-a-week and practice twice a day?
I don't, but...
Yeah, okay, good. That's it. What's the one part of the schedule, the one team where you look at like, oh, shit. We got to play them this day. What is there that one team that you like? You just have an omen against. You just can't play good against, or you haven't had good game against, or you struggle.
To be honest, not a lot.
I always look
when the day that we play in Milan.
Okay.
Because I you know I never had a good performance.
There you
know,
go. That's what I'm talking about.
And, okay.
So there is one of those teams.
Yeah, Milan has been pretty bad lately. I always had shitty performances there. And
let's hope Coach,
the fans
Coach
love
Coach
that.
Doesn't listen to this.
Oh, he knows.
Okay.
He knows I've been playing shitty Milan. Played 8 minutes last year, sat in the bench.
Oh, he knows
great
that.
Great game. Great game to watch. actually, I look forward to play this time.
What about a player? What about a player like, oh, shit, I got to play against him there?
This is difficult right now. It's I actually look forward to play against big players, big scorer. You know, it's for me, throughout my career, every time I have a defensive mission, somebody to stop, something that motivates me like that I go in the game thinking, okay, is I got to do this, it helps me get in the game better. It helps my offense also.
Mm.
And, you know, I look forward to the challenge. There's so many great players around EuroLeague. And
I'm just going to throw a guess. I love the guy, and a lot of people love him. But if I were you, man, like the first person that would come to my mind when someone asked me a question, I'd be like, Capasso. I do not want to play against that little rat. That's my boy. I love him to death, man. But he just gets like – he's in you all day long. He doesn't leave you alone.
I'm not backing down, though.
Oh, no, I know you're not backing down. But the problem is he's like that little dude, you know, that like, you know, I watch him, you know, when I do these games, I'm like, man, like back in our day, someone would have just taken him out.
Yeah.
You know, I probably can't say they'll probably cut that out, but I love watching him play. He's an incredible
player. Usually
yeah.
He's is one of those players that really affect the way you play,
yeah.
How you bring the ball up court. Really test you mentally. If you're able to sustain that stress that he brings to you, mm-hmm. then you're good. If not, it's very easy to lose
it. Take you out of your game.
Yeah,
he's the kind of guy to take you out of your game. Yeah. Argentinians have a way of doing that. So do Nocioni.
Yeah, they do. They're kind of quiet, low-key, but...
But they got character,
know, they
man.
Got character, and they know how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to ask you about your tattoos because it's crazy what's going on there, you know, but
got out of control.
Yes. Has your wife tatted up too? Or
she
just,
got a couple, but
just a couple.
Not as bad.
What's the one that means the most to you?
This. It's my daughter name, Victoria.
Okay.
And then I got a phrase on my chest that says, everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like my life story, that things do happen for a reason, and I strongly believe in that. So, yeah.
You're 30, you'll be 31 in...
32 in December.
You'll be 32 in December.
32 years young.
32 years young.
Yeah.
You know this ain't going to last much longer, right?
I think I got a lot of mileage still.
You got a lot of mileage.
I got a lot of mileage.
But it has an expiration date.
It hasn't hit yet. Although sometimes I do have thoughts about what am I going to do in the future? What's after this? Should I start to plan something? So that's when,
yes.
Yes. That's, in the past, I made a couple investments just to, you know, save money and put my money away. And mm-hmm. I have a couple investments into apartments.
You want to coach a little bit?
I really don't know. It could go anywhere. It could go anywhere from coaching. It could go into, I don't know, owning a bar. It could go anywhere.
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
I'm not talking a pub. I'm talking about a bar. You know, one of those slow Italian bars. You get coffee and croissant.
the reason why I always ask, man, is because the hardest part about this sport is that you don't actually retire from it.
You don't.
Because no one's giving you the Rolex watch and, you know, bringing the cake to the office and like saying goodbye to you and giving you hugs and kisses and, you know, and you move on. You start that those phone calls you get from your agent about Cesca, they ain't there anymore. I agree.
So you got to have a good backup plan.
Yeah.
Not a backup plan, a future plan.
A future plan.
You know, actually, this might interest you. In the past, I'm not investing in anything. I'm putting up
a gym in downtown Madrid.
I did some commentating in the past. I did some tryouts for Sky Sport in Italy about commentating NBA. I kind of liked it.
We're cutting this interview right now.
Oh, because you're scared I might take your spot.
Exactly. I already got to deal with Kyle Hines trying to take my spot, for God's sakes. You know, I get a podcast. He gets a podcast. I'm like, come on, man. Hey, man. Let me shake the hand real quick. That's it for me.
It's been great.
Daniel Haggett, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. You've been probably one of my favorite guests, and as all the noise comes in, you've been one of my favorite guests because I've actually learned so much about you as I spoke, and I haven't had that opportunity. A lot of people, I've known a lot of people before I've done the interview, so I wish you the best of luck. Got a really good feeling I'm going to see you in Cologne, Germany in sometime around late May 2020.
And we'll see
if you can repeat again, man. I appreciate it, man. We'll see you in a couple weeks, man. You'll be on live. Crossover.
Thank you very much.
Joe R. Lucas, Daniel Haggett. Check it out.
See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.